Major Vizard, Reel 10. We're talking about the landing of your A Company,
yes.
of 16th Battalion at Salerno.
Yes.
How did you actually go about? What formation would you adopt in coming off? Would you lead them off, or what? How was it arranged?
We were organised in. I was the lead man off. There were two ranks. Tom Logan took one, I took the other, and then we had two subalterns, and they were standing behind, and we organised ourselves into three, and. Number one platoon moved off to its right, rushed up the beach, moving to the right. Number two rushed up, moving to the centre. And number three. So as they came off, they went in their different directions. And the Sergeant Major organised the disembarkation so that they, fairly roughly, you've got a fellow moving that way, a fellow moving that way, and a fellow moving this way, and it's dispersed. There's no solid targets on the beach at all.
Were you under concentrated fire, or was it sort of slightly random?
Small arms fire. And there were some quite a lot of shelling. I mean, the sand was constantly being thrown up by quite large caliber shells. These were, I think, they were, as I say, I think they were the 88s sort of firing from the sand dunes.
Was the fire sort of aimed at you, or was it just aimed at the beach area?
It was general fire, and there was some mortar fire too. But I think they were principally aiming at the vessels, because there were quite a few, you see, coming in. These LCIs, I mean, they were all along the coast. And I look back at my chap, and I've since discussed it with him, he's in Philadelphia. And he said, well, as soon as the last of you guys are off, he said, we got our butts out of there. And he suffered a direct hit on his topsides. Unfortunately, he was down forward, superintending the withdrawal of the inventory. And I don't think he suffered any casualties, but he got out of there pretty fast. And the last thing I remember seeing of him then, as I looked over my shoulder and we were moving up the beach, stretcher bearers were dragging certain chaps who already had been sustained wounds. And we foregathered under the shadow of the trees.
What was your role during the landing then? I mean, you'd gone off first, but what was your job when you hit the beach?
Well, the idea was that we had certain targets. We had to move forward towards the road. And
which road? That be between...
The road between Positano and Salerno. It was about, I suppose, 500 yards in from the beach. There were quite a few casualties lying around. I'd gone under those trees. I found quite a lot. In fact, of the 128s I found, and I gathered them together and put them into a barn. There were quite a lot of jerrys to it, because they must have had shore defences close down by the beach. I don't know why, but they did. A lot of jerrys down there. And we consolidated our area. The York and Ranks were on that side, and Pat Casey wasn't too far away. Although in Sicily he'd been miles off, when we got to Salerno he was, I suppose, a quarter of a mile away. And I got in touch with him by radio and established where he was. And we met up. And
Who was dealing, or who dealt with, the Tiger tanks, the ones that were dug in hole down?
Well, they withdrew because the monitors began firing these 10-inch and 50-enormous rate, like organ music going overhead, the sound of them, unbelievable. Very similar, though, to the Nebelwerfer, the multiple rocket launcher of Germany. Makes a musical sound as it goes across, but these monitors were firing, and I think that probably as soon as they'd had one or two of those land, I think this squadron of tanks withdrew, for which we were very thankful because they were causing us a lot of unease. We moved as far inland as we could get. There was a lot of small arms fire. I remember the medical sergeant saying to me that along the coast, but the MO eventually got hold of the sergeant and the corporal and the four stretcher bearers, and they headed off and established themselves actually underneath in a tunnel underneath the road and set up an RAP. So at least we had somewhere to take casualties. And the rest of that afternoon and evening, we were moving around trying to get towards this road, which was our immediate target. In the meantime, we run into the open ranks of 138 and 128, the open ranks, and the colonel, Aubrey Miller, who was then colonel of the 6th Yorkshire Ranks, he said to me, where are the Durhams? And so I said, oh, this is Major Casey and Major Bizarre. And our troops are holding the whole of this area, the wooded area of the beach. And he said, are you going to fight this until your colonel gets ashore? And I said, well, that's our plan. He said, which are you as a senior? And we didn't know. We both made up the same day. Curious. He said, well, I think the best thing is join up with me. He said, you can fight as companies of the Yorkshire Ranks until Colonel Preston gets ashore. Because you see, the other two rifle companies and the headquarters company, support company, and the headquarters, the battalion headquarters, were all on landing ship transport, still up at sea. They didn't actually get ashore until day two.
That doesn't sound a very sensible arrangement.
Well, there was sufficient. It's not very easy to handle a battalion assault from yourself. I'm inclined to think it's best. We normally, after all, I'm sure you normally attack two companies up, or maybe three, but certainly never commit the whole battalion to an assault.
Were you in radio contact with Preston?
No. I only had 18 sets, and he was well offshore. No, I then worked with Aubrey Miller, and we were still on our targets because, although we were, as you might say, under local command of Yorkshire Ranks, we were still aiming at our own targets. And we, in fact, reached the road that we were given as our immediate target on the second day. We spent a very fretful night. I don't think anybody slept at all. In fact, at that occasion, I don't believe anybody slept for 3 days. It can be done when you're that age.
What effects does it have, though, or did it have any effect? That's 3 days without sleep.
Well, it dulls your senses a bit, but... when your senses are being stretched like violin strings, it's the aftermath more than the act at the time. No, I think nobody had any sleep for 3 days.
Did they give you anything to try and keep you awake? I believe they did in the Navy, but it's even...
We didn't have anything, no. So that's, on day two, working with the Yorkshire Ranks, we advanced towards Salerno town, and... surrounded it completely, and it wasn't hostile, as the Italians had surrendered. There was no hostility from there, and the Germans had withdrawn what forces they had. They weren't very interested in holding a small, isolated, little more than fishing town. So they'd moved back, and we moved into Salerno. It wasn't very difficult.
That's what I was going to know. There was less firing then, generally.
Mm. On day two, there was. The German counterattack came in on day three. That's when it got very nasty. But day two was easier.
Now, were you consolidating on the town, or did you go through?
We were still in geographical terms. We were still south of the town. We landed well south of the town on Green Beach and moved our way inland, and then we moved along. So we were still somewhere. But that second day was more easy because we consolidated our positions and moved up towards Salerno. The usual story, people coming out and throwing flowers at you. And I didn't believe any of it. Anyway, there was quite a lot of hostile fire coming down. Not only small arms fire, but quite a lot of, I suppose, mortar fire. Must have been mortar fire.
And that was coming from the hills beyond?
Yeah, because the hills were there. Must have been coming over the top. Then on day three, we had our target was the colonel had arrived, and I'd come back under command, and Pat, both back under command. He held an O group in Salerno. We ran to fire. I remember that O group very vividly.
Can you tell us firstly, just for the tape, what an O group was exactly?
Just the order group, and he used to call it what he called an O group. And then the local commanders would turn up.
Down to what level?
Oh, mostly the colonel's own group would merely be company commanders. Six, not more. In any case, not very good to have groups of people because, as on this occasion, we were holding the order group. It was in the town, but we had a shell on the roof. And in fact, I think Harry Mine here got a nasty flesh wound. He was a support company. So it doesn't do to have too many people together in one group when you're in a forward area like that. And the colonel gave us our instructions, as he said, the night of day two and early day three. The colonel gave us our orders, and D Company and C Company were moving towards the tobacco factory. And that was their target. And the guards were in that area too. I think they were Coldstreamers. I can't remember now. But certainly there was a guards battalion there. And there was a growing amount of shelling because Jerry now knew where the point of impact had been. And he was mustering and concentrating all his efforts on this particular area of the beach because behind us, the beach brick began to form.
Can you just, again, explain what a beach brick was?
The beach brick is something that came into existence during the Second World War because they hadn't had need of them before, but every time you made an assault landing, after the initial waves had gone through, you established this beach brick, which set itself up as mostly Royal Engineers and also Army Service Corps would be known as REMI now, and they organized landing arrangements for these larger vessels and for the disembarkation of transport. And they also established food depots, ammunition depots, water carts, and all that kind of thing. It was, in fact, an administrative center, and they had the communications between troops on the land and the beach brick and the ships out at sea. They were the linchpin. They did a good job, these beach bricks.
So they were beginning to draw fire.
And they had a main dressing station in the beach brick. And the serious casualties were pushed through there before evacuation. My particular task with A Company was to go up to Hospital Hill. Now this would be about the 12th. Yeah, the 12th of September. Yeah, we've been ashore for 3 or 4 days, landed on the 9th, and this would be about the 12th. And our task was to go up Hospital Hill and take the hospital. Now, this is one of the instances of which we would meet a lot in the future, where prohibited areas under Geneva Convention, in fact, were rather loosely regarded by the Germans. I mean, just as casino later on, the hospital should not have been occupied. It was. And the hospital was run by nuns, and the Jerry was up there, so our task was to go up the hill and to take the hospital. And I forget now, I think it was the Lincolns which were our reps. Yes, they were Lincolns. Anyway, we set off, and this is the end of day three, and the beginning of day four, and this was the moment when the sustained German counterattack to the invasion really hit. And whereas previously there had been a lot of shelling from these tanks, I think, and a lot of small arms fire, I don't think it had been aimed particularly at any particular formation or group of people or group of ships or any other. It was a general, quite a lot of generalized fire, and casualties had been fairly light. But on this end of day three, beginning of day four, the dawn of September 13th, we were moving. I had one platoon on the left, and I had three platoon on the right, and I was in the middle with a reserve platoon moving up this heavily wooded hill. It was a sort of pine tree on the side of the hill. And we really began to come under quite strong sustained fire from the right flank particularly. A lot of mortar fire. In fact, at one stage, I rang on my 18 set and spoke to the colonel and said, are you quite sure that we aren't too far forward and that we're not running into our own mortar fire? No, he said, what you're getting is from Jerry, and we were getting a lot. And we moved on further up this, through these wooded pines, spreading out as far as possible. There were no mines, hadn't lately mines. I could see defended positions. They were sort of dugouts, but they'd gone, the troops had gone. They were, the Germans were mostly up and around the hospital up at the top of the hill.
And you were sort of going around to the left of it?
We were moving, well, I had one for two. Number one, two on the left, and number three on the right, and I was in the middle, and there was a pincer movement. But I had the Lincolns. Lincolns were taking part in this hospital there. And as I say, there was a change in the German tactics, or strategy, I suppose, more than tactics. I think there was a change in the German strategy that they realized now that where it was coming from. The Italians, of course, had jacked it in. The Germans had rushed in to replace them. They weren't very far away, we found out later. Hermann Göring Panzer Grenadiers were right behind Salerno, waiting for the Italians to fold. Then they moved up. So there was some quite stiff and stern opposition. And the Panzer Grenadiers, some of them were rabid Nazis. Anyway, we went on, and this attack was coming very strongly indeed from the right flank. And I think what had happened was that we may have moved slightly further forward than I think it was the guards on the right, and I'm not sure, but they were up towards the tobacco factory. I think that they were having a lot of hard time, and I could understand that. But we were moving forward, and as a result, we were getting not only opposition from the front, but we were getting it strongly from the right flank. And it was up there that we were moving along, and there was a wadi, a kind of area where the rainwater ran down the hill for many years, and it made a sort of wadi. And we were sort of watching this and that, moving through a part of it, and there was a tremendous burst of Schmeisser machine pistol fire from, I suppose, a little bit more than about 300 yards away on the right hand side. And we jumped simultaneously. The sergeant major jumped, and I jumped, and Tom jumped. Unfortunately, poor Tom, he jumped a bit too late. And I landed on top of the sergeant major, and Tom landed on top of me, but he'd been wounded badly through the stomach. So we got him dressed as best we could, and got him onto a stretcher and evacuated him, and he died. He died. I always thought very badly about this, because I thought it was my job to jump last, but it's instinctive. when you get the Schmeisser will fire at 800 grams a minute, it's you jump, and Sergeant Major Nutty Wilson, I mean, he jumped, and I jumped after him, so landed right on top of him, and then Tom landed on top of me, but Tom was badly hurt. I felt badly about that loss of Tom Logan, a very fine chap. I went to see his mother after the war and explained it all to her. I told her it really ought to be me, not Tom. And she said, well, the circumstances as they were, I can't find it in my heart to blame you. So I felt a bit better then. But it should have been me. I should have pushed Tom in and got in after him, but it didn't do all that. Anyway, after Tom had been carted off, we pressed on up the hill. We'd half swung.
Were you able to do anything about something like that, Schmeisser? I mean, would you fire back?
We were firing small 2-inch mortars. And I called up the colonel and asked him for the mortar platoon to lay onto the right flank. And he said, I've got it on there already, he said, because I've been asked by the formation on your right hand to put mortar fire down. I'm doing it already. But it didn't stop whatever was happening over there. So I left the number one platoon with Miller, I think. Yes, Miller was it. Not Miles, Miller. He was there, and I swung on the one off its axis up the hill, slightly to face the right hand side.
To face where the worst of the fire was coming from.
I moved us, number three, forward, and we half veered to the right. So we were facing where the trouble was coming from. And we gave them everything we'd got. And I heard later that support company had been laying into them. They'd got some Vickers medium machine guns, and they'd mounted those, and they were raking the whole of that area. But it was quite clear that this is where Jerry was putting in one of his principal retaliatory attacks to try and force people back to the beach. I don't think that we were more than 1,500 yards inland. It's hard to tell, but I don't think we were more than 1,500 yards. And in fact, I heard subsequently that they were worried whether they could hold the bridgehead at all. The generals were contemplating the possibility. I mean, the admin side was working on the possibility of possibly not being able to hold it. And they already, I think, had ideas for landing further up the coast to take the pressure off. Unfortunately, the 8th Army had landed down in the very extreme south of Italy. They were moving up through the toe, foot and boot, up into Campania. And I think this was taking some pressure off. But we moved on into this sort of half-circling motion and faced this. And we, in fact, caused them to pull back, because we had everything we'd got going up unsteadily. We had some nice, reasonably well-protected situation in these river waddies, and rainwater had run down. There were great gullies with gnarled roots of these palm trees, these pine trees. And we were able to lie in there and give them all we'd got. We only got 12 grain guns. And you can do quite a lot of harm with 12 grain guns, but I've always been cautious with ammunition. I always think that half a dozen well-placed shots is better than the entire magazine loose off. So that's what we did. And we remained there for a while, but the mortar fire began to get very troublesome. And we were able to resume our move up the hill, having at least quietened down, if not silenced, this flank attack from Jerry. We were able to resume our move forward, and I sent Miller back over to the left, number one platoon was over there, and then three and two moved forward. We all moved forward, but we no longer had a reserve platoon. We were moving our company. And the mortar fire became much more intense, and we began to sustain quite a lot of casualties. The stretcher bearers were at work. It was mostly splinters. I don't remember anybody giving a direct hit, but I'm mostly shrapnel splinters. It's doing a lot of harm. And I remember some chaps coming back and they'd been hit in the eye. And it was quite clearly that they switched from the flank, and they were now coming over the top of it. Poor old nuns inside must have had a rotten time with it. Anyway, this continued until, I suppose, 12 o'clock, midday, something like that. And then one of these mortar bombs landed, I was crouched, but one of these mortar bombs landed to the right of me, and a piece, a splinter, zipped through and then got me at the bottom of the back. And it wasn't painful particularly at first, anyway, I got strapped up. It was a flesh, very large a flesh wound, but it had damaged the spine a bit. It was difficult to walk. And got patched up and continued moving forward. But the medical sergeant who was with me said that he said, you ought to jack it in. He said, you're losing blood. So I said, well, no, it was all right. And Tom Logan had gone, you see. Tom had been there. It didn't matter that Tom had been there. Tom actually died in the main dressing section. So he pressed on, and in the end, the sergeant was right, because I passed out with loss of blood, and nothing I could do about it. But, we had moved another 200 yards further up the hospital hill. So we had a situation where there was Miller on the left, and what was left of one and two and three platoons were more or less to the centre and right of the hill. And I got carted off. I don't really remember what happened, because I was carted off. But I know from history what happened, but that's not sure interested in me.
What if you just sketch in quickly what happened to your company?
Well, it was brilliantly handled by Sergeant Major Wilson, who got these two platoons, because there'd been a lot of cavalry, not just me, I mean, there must have been eight or ten fellows who'd all been hit by the small fire. After we'd left, we were a bit thin on the ground, but he got hold of the balance of three platoon and two platoon and collected them, and he moved them steadily forward, moving left-handed through the trees, and still suffering some casualties as he went. But he met up with Miller on the left flank, and they moved forward, and they were never able to take the hospital that day. But it was a successful action in that the company reached the walls of the hospital and was able to lie under the walls, out of the fire from the hospital itself. But all this I didn't hear about till afterwards.
No.
Wilson got the DCM for that, which he never heard.
How now? You don't remember how you were evacuated then?
Well, I remember quite a lot, yes. I came to, I was evacuated through the headquarters of the 6th York and Lancs Battalion headquarters. And I remember Aubrey Miller. And he said to me, what's happened to you? I said, I'm all right. I'll be back before long. He said, you won't. So he said, do you want a shot of morphine? Yeah, well, most of us carry the file of morphine. And I said, no, it's not all that painful. But principally loss of blood. I should have jacked it in earlier. With Tom going, you see, you can't. Anyway, they evacuated us down to the main dressing station. And
how did they get you out? I mean, was it stretcher bearers then?
Well, you see, it was just a steep hill covered in pine trees, so there was no other way. They slid them on the ground some part of the time where they could. They had runners, these stretchers.